Line, Willie, D-Maze, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. Day 3 of SEC Media Days. We're live out here at the Grand Hyatt in downtown Nashville. Our SEC Media Days coverage is brought to you by Volunteer Hose and Gasket in Mercedes-Benz of Music City. It's a Wednesday at noon, so it's Hutton o'clock. Hutton, always appreciate our time with you.
My favorite 30 minutes right here, smack dab in the middle of the week. Great to be on, and great to join you live here at the, what is it, Grand Hyatt.
Grand Hyatt.
Is where some
we
people
are.
Might say this is everyone's favorite 30 minutes of
is
the
Willie
week.
At the Ritz-Carlton? I'm looking at the YouTube stream right now, and he has the same backdrop, so I'm assuming it's the same type of hotel, which means it's very expensive. Which I would expect from Willie Donick.
He does look awfully camouflaged. Yeah,
isn't this weird that usually it's Hutton on the Zoom talking to us in the studio. I'm on the Zoom now talking to Hutton, but yeah, I'm at a residence today. I'm in the home office of my buddy Bruce Elder, co-captain 1993 Vanderbilt Commodore Championship basketball team. But he was nice enough to let me use the office today. So yeah, I'm in the high end. But I'm just not in a high-end hotel.
He's in a gated community is what I hear.
Exactly. Well, Hutton, DeAndre Hopkins is officially a Titan. What did you make of the deal? What did you make of the term, the money? What did you make of the fit?
I think it's a team-friendly contract, honestly. I mean, it feels like they were negotiating against themselves. They gave $3 million in incentives that apparently, according to those covering the Patriots, Patriots wanted to match certain terms of the money, but they wanted more of the incentives than what the Titans were giving the money up front. I don't mind it. I'm also just straight up, I'm hesitant to be all in on what this team becomes with him. They needed him in that wide receiver core. Mace, I know you're thinking about who they were versus what they became too. Mm-hmm. And we chatted about this a couple of weeks ago, but depth-wise, they needed a proven guy, a playmaker, a guy that just scores touchdowns. And this team doesn't have many of those. And they have that guy when he's available. Mm-hmm. I like that. I'm also not sitting here saying, oh, this is, Treylon Burks is going to go off because he's got Hopkins opposite him. There's a lot that happens between now and the start of the season. And it's a slow progression normally, not a fast one. And, I mean, all that to say, Caroline, I like it. I'm not jumping in saying I love it yet because this team doesn't have a great history, regardless of coach or general manager, of bringing guys in and having them actually produce to the level that they were paid to do. And also from Hopkins' point of view, for me, is I need to know how motivated he is. Mm-hmm. Is he pissed off that his market value was what it was versus what I'm sure he thought he was going to get either via trade or visit-wise? Or is this more like a Randy Moss or, a guy that's coming in for another paycheck, and which I'm totally fine with?
Yeah.
He's reached that level where he's going to get paid before he's not in the league. I don't know where he is in that because, quite frankly, the NFL's telling us he's got to prove it again before they're going to pay him the way that the Cardinals just paid him. I'm very intrigued with the dynamic of the locker room and the organization, who once again, it looks like they're planning for the future while trying to win now.
So you say you're not all in, and that's fair. That's really fair. Jonathan,
I'm in on the idea, the concept.
Okay.
But and I don't blame them one bit for signing him. I'm just not saying I don't think they're above Jacksonville with the move. I think they're with Jacksonville. I think there's a lot of people that are saying, oh, Titans are again the favorite of the division. I'm not there yet.
Has the DeAndre Hopkins signing bridged the gap between Titans and
Jacksonville? No doubt. Again, they're neck and neck. Mm-hmm. They were an organization that looked like they'd take that back to Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. Regardless of Jacksonville's late run and how that game ended up with the last game of the season, it just didn't feel the same. The momentum had really shifted towards Florida, right? Now I think you give some hope and momentum back in, a little boost in the passing game. But this still comes down to, can they protect Ryan Tannehill or not?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of questions there just based on you know, factors of last year with injuries and guys going down, guys getting moved around, guys not panning out with who they brought in. I have no idea if a backup from Philly comes in and starts the same way Dennis Kelly was a hit. Or what does the suspension early in the season with Nicholas Petit-Frere do to the core of that group that they have in mind that was healthy?
In the toughest stretch of the season.
It's all a – they've got to protect their quarterback if they want the wide receivers to actually put up some numbers.
Yeah, you're right. This move to me, even though I do like it, Hutt, from the standpoint of – because they needed him. This was the situation, I believe, that had – Hopkins gone, it didn't even have to be New England, but if Hopkins had gone to another team, I think you wouldn't have been able to hear the last of it here in Nashville. Because everybody would point back to A.J. Brown. You let him get away. You had an opportunity to get another receiver. For whatever reason, you didn't pay him the money to get him. Now, how he performs this season, I don't know. I think the biggest question for me with him is how does he adapt?
Yes. You
know, to being possibly the number two, because as good as D-Hop has been in his career, and I've said this over and over again, when it comes to catching the football, I haven't seen anyone like him.
I agree with
since
you.
Larry Fitzgerald and Chris Carter, as far as just catching a football.
Amazing radius.
Exactly. But how did he come into an offense where he could potentially not be the number one, for one, but he's not getting the targets that he's used. He's a high-volume guy. Even last year, he was a high-volume guy. People look at it, well, yeah, 65 catches, 9 games, 700 yards. Well, hell, they threw to him almost 100 times. So he's a high-volume. Now, how do you come and not be a high-volume guy? How do you adapt to that?
Well, here's the truth, though. They are going to be at their pinnacle, at their best, if Treylon Burks
is
the number one.
And that's what I believe.
And here's the other thing. No one was trying to sign him to be a number two anywhere else either. That's the crazy. The market, like, there are no other teams mentioned for the deal he just received. And maybe Kansas City would have gotten in if they have Jones restructured and that frees up some salary cap space. But, again, like, the number of teams that have been reported with an offer, too. And he had his pick on, you can be a number one. You can also just play. You can play now instead of waiting for later. I like the fact that he went ahead and signed now. And it's crucial now because Tannehill's coming off of the ankle surgery. Everything looks great with Burks based on those that have been laying eyes on him. Now they've got to get acclimated as a unit, as a passing group. And then how much does Chigakonkwo factor in to this mix too and how they can run their offense? He's primarily an outside receiver. I know he ran more inside a bit last year. I think that's where he got the most of his numbers. I'm saying snap counts were higher inside than they had been throughout his career. But he's the outside guy, and you can move Burks around and make him the puzzle piece and the number one. Feed Treylon Burks. I want the ball in his hands, and you can use Hopkins to your advantage there. But this cannot be the Julio Jones experiment. Mm-hmm. Not from Julio's stance. Mm-hmm. They had Julio Jones on the sideline on like 3rd and 13. With a group of a package group, I'm thinking, why trade for him if you're not going to have him on the field on the money downs where you need to move the chains?
Right.
They've got to also treat Hopkins that way. They can't just ignore the fact, the analytics are telling us to put so and so in here. No. Hopkins is on the field with Burks, and you know this can't be some package thing, and I don't think it will be. It can't be.
Well, I don't think they deviate from what they do. And I don't know if Hopkins' team actually looked at what the Titans do as far as personnel. Because if they did, they would know, even with A.J. Brown,
but he
they
does
still
know.
Were moving him in and out with personnel.
Yeah, but on the moment opportunities, A.J.'s on the field, right?
Uh-huh.
Same thing. He certainly knows Tim Kelly, and he trusts Mike Vrabel. He knows Bill O'Brien. Belichick's always been a massive fan of DeAndre Hopkins and the mic'd up sets on NFL films when they're interacting and when they're game planning against the Texans back in the day. So I think the teams that were involved, he also knew conceptually what it would look like. And he also put up big numbers in an offense that was similar to that when Kelly was there in Houston.
but he was the number one guy. Now,
if he
is the number one guy in this offense, well, let me rephrase.
He's instantly the most productive pass catcher they have now.
If Treylon Burks isn't the number one guy, is there a problem with this offense?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because Treylon Burks is also living up to expectations, too, or not in this scenario.
Exactly.
But look, this gives them an opportunity to have Treylon Burks be the number one guy. Because right now, if they didn't have Hopkins, who else are you worried about in that passing game? And you may not even be worried about Burks, but I mean, he's the focus of how you would defend the passing game against the Tennessee Titans on third and, let's be honest, it would be third and 10 plus based on what we saw last year.
More with Jonathan Hutton coming up next. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace is brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace. 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. Live out here at SEC Media Days at the Grand Hyatt in downtown Nashville. Jonathan Hutton is with us now.
Okay, Hut, so you've been at the SEC Media Days these last few days through the ranks here. I feel like we're lacking that huge, juicy topic that we're all just rallying around here. But let me get your thoughts, because Tennessee hasn't gone yet. I'm sure this will come up a lot.
Yeah.
When they do, but just your thoughts as now we've had a few days to sort of digest the final ruling from the NCAA on the sanctions.
The sanctions, so I spoke with Greg Sankey earlier this morning, Willie, and that topic came up just from the length, 3 years and all of the different reports, and you wrap up your internal investigation, you self-impose things, and then you sit around and wait. I think that is the next hurdle, is what takes so long in this? I think that's the topic with it. I don't believe in punishing players that had nothing to do with an issue that was prior to their arrival anywhere close to on campus. You know, Heupel has had to deal with the self-imposed scholarship reductions and things when he first took over. Unlike Pruitt, he was actually winning with the talent that he had and looked vastly different with Heupel than Jeremy Pruitt. The $8 million fine is fascinating because that to me, that the highest that we've seen. I don't blame the NCAA for coming down with that penalty because they also want to set a precedent. But at the same time, It's leadership. It's a penalty imposed by a governing body that I don't know when or when they don't have power. It's a bizarre time in college athletics, and they get to pick and choose when they want to, you know, be heavy-handed or not. And I think in large part, it's just this is their lane where they can be heavy-handed, and in other places they can't. And the fine was certainly showing that and indicative of that. The other really interesting piece that I was reading, I believe Adam Spartz put out the list, and anyone could see it based on text exchange and emails, but Fulmer's list of everyone that he would consider or would like to have considered if Pruitt had to get the axe. I mean, it was a long list, and it's a list of coaches that are walking these halls this week here in Nashville.
Such as? So name a couple.
Well, he would. These were more notes. He had a lot of typos in it, so I think it's more of like a iPhone note that he forwarded to one of his assistants, who was then going to write up something that he would approve. But Shane Beamer was listed. Eli Drinkwitz was listed. They looked at a couple of other young guys. He mentioned Healy as a energetic and promising young coach, I believe, was the in parentheses there.
Joe Brady was on that list.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it was almost like a live brainstorm that you got to see.
Yeah. But and it's a great example, too, isn't it, Hutt, that your stock, just take that list, right? In that moment, a lot of those guys really did have a lot of momentum. And now, just fast forward just a couple of years later, it's not the same for some of those guys.
Yeah.
The stock
no
has
doubt.
Risen and fallen for a bunch of those guys.
No doubt, and it's also interesting, you know, once Fulmer, steps down, steps aside, retires, And he didn't. He also said that he didn't agree with firing Pruitt in that same note. But then here's kind of a brainstorm assessment of where he would like to go with the hire, if in fact it had to happen. I think it's also important to look at where Tennessee ended up, and the fact that they end up hiring Heupel from the same university where the AD is hired to replace Fulmer, and it was almost deemed as this is the last resort because of the situation. And it ends up being the best possible of the coaches on that list at the time when Fulmer would have been pulling the trigger and hiring someone. So, again, I go back to, you know, in the moment, in reaction to the moment, you don't really realize what something can be based on who or who doesn't know who's doing the hiring, the firing, and the situation that they're inheriting. I love the coaches that don't make excuses, and Heupel didn't. We haven't seen that from him.
I think based on all those notes, I think every Tennessee fan is pretty happy with where it's gone since then, as opposed
yes.
to the leadership of Philip Fulmer as an athletic director as opposed to a football coach. But
yes,
let me throw this at you, Hutt. I read a very interesting article on the Tennessee story by Pat Forty, who's been at the SEC Media Days this week as well. And he was basically saying, look, this is the end of an era. There was no postseason ban for Tennessee. And when you take a look forward, it's hard to imagine that a team could cheat to a point where you would get a postseason ban just because the rules have been loosened up so much. Like, what could you do that could get you knocked out of a postseason? So those days might be – like, Tennessee could have been the last one. That was maybe the last shot. That was his argument anyway. What do you think?
I guess so. I mean, I'm thinking of what we've seen recently. You know, I'm thinking of Les Miles. You know, Les Miles had wins taken away. So the postseason ban, quote unquote, was they took away these wins from the last couple of years from Tennessee in the bowls, which means nothing. Those games happened. We saw the results. They made the money. The players got the experience. You know, all of that. And you're telling me Les Miles would not. He would not want to trade wins for a national title. Of course he would.
Right.
They did, you know, at LSU. So I mean, it's a governing body that I don't really know what type of power they wield. And I think the most powerful dude right now in college athletics is Greg Sankey, because everyone kind of follows the mantra and the tone of whatever he's trying to set on that Monday address, which I didn't find very I didn't find very good for where we're headed in NIL, mm-hmm. Because I don't think it didn't come across as very positive or optimistic that anything's going to happen anytime soon in terms of regulation, either state by state, conference by conference, or what he was trying to push was federal legislation and having Congress do it.
Yeah, that's another thing that I wanted to touch on with you.
And by the way, they're pointing to people who don't really they're in government. They're pointing to people to make up rules and regulations for Nick Saban, who's asking, just show me the rule book. I want to follow have everyone follow the same rules. Nick Saban and Greg Sankey are looking at people that don't know anything what they're trying to regulate and come up with rules for.
And they don't
care.
But aside from that, like, why would you? Greg Sankey could get with Tony Petitti, mm-hmm. With the Big Ten. He's got to have a better relationship with him than he did with Kevin Warren. And they can come up with their own rules to follow if they really want to. And they actually have contact with all these coaches, the administrator, the ADs, the collectives. There's a lot of people that are just grandstanding in order to sway one side instead of the other. And I think that's where we are, and I think Sankey was alluding to that on Monday.
Well, they want Congress to do the dirty work. They want Congress to do their dirty work.
Well, but I think everyone's using everyone in that to mm-hmm. stay in the status quo. And I didn't find it very optimistic that what he was saying last year, they didn't make much progress, even though I think they're about to present a bill soon to across Congress. I mean, we've seen that before, too. I think it's just a slow, slow process that if we're talking about this as much as we are and you want change with the system, there has to be someone first and foremost, they need to find out who's going to lead that charge. And I don't.
Is it Sankey?
Well, it could be. It absolutely can be.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think pointing things to Capitol Hill is automatically some big solution when you're going to wait, you know, 3-4 years through an entire election cycle instead of just banding together and making college football whatever you think it should be at the very top and letting everything else be governed a different way. That's just the where we are, and I don't think we're close to either option currently.
Why do you think they don't do that?
I mean, multiple reasons come to mind. I mean, first, the presidents and the universities, the board of directors don't want it because they like the money they're raking in now. They don't want the players to be employees or independent contractors. Mm-hmm. They don't want a union. We're going to get that anyway.
Yeah.
And I think also the TV money that and the contracts that have just been signed play a factor into all of it too, because you're trying to make everybody happy, which you're not going to be able to please everyone in this. And and while that goes on, again, I'm just reading between the lines, why that goes on, you're complaining, you're like the big-time college football is complaining about where we're headed in the player space, and no one's really doing anything to regulate it except talk about regulation without having a plan mapped out, because those that will be coming up with those rules don't really know the space that they're about to jump into and regulate. And it's got to be someone that steps up and grabs the brass ring that Vince McMahon talks about in WWF. That could be Greg Sankey in a snap.
WWE.
World Wildlife Foundation.
Worldwide Wrestling. That, like, everybody wants change, but nobody knows how to do it. And that's kind of the sticky middle.
But I asked Sankey about it this morning, Caroline, and he halfway agreed, you know, and also complained to him about, you know, wanting to expand the NCAA tournament. I'm not in on that.
Oh, I'm not in on that.
Well, it's coming.
We don't need to expand. We're good. We're good where we are. Hutton, appreciate you for stopping by.
Always a great chat with you guys. Willie, keep rocking and rolling there in the double-gated community, and look forward to seeing you guys around.
I'll be back.
We'll talk to you next week.
If all goes well, I'll be back tomorrow with you guys among the ranks.
Hate to do this, but I got to run.
We'll react to what Hutton had to say coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.